this morning as Bob brings us the message. I'm sure that he appreciates your kind attention, your silent prayers in his behalf. It's my privilege to introduce our brother Bob as our speaker this morning.
Thank you, David. Good morning. It's good to see you all here today. I do have some things to bring us today, and hopefully you'll find it edifying for your spiritual lives. There was a holiday this week. I don't know if you knew it or not, but there was a holiday. It's a Jewish holiday, but I thought it was interesting to bring it up at this time, kind of as a refresher. And the holiday was the Feast of Purim, it commemorates the story of Esther. Okay, so I think that most of us have a general idea, but I'm not sure if everybody understands, especially the younger ones, remembers the story of Esther. But this last Wednesday and Thursday was that feast, and it's a big feast for the Jews. And I'm not saying that we should follow this feast. But there's some things I would like to bring out of this story as well. So as a refresher, I'm not going to read the book of Esther, but I will just kind of give you the Reader's Digest version of it. To set the setting for this story, it happened while Persia was the ruler of most of the world. Scholars estimate that 44% of the population of the world was a subject of Persia, like 50 million people. So it was huge. And I remember from Wednesday night, we studied a little bit about Cyrus, and that he was the first king of Persia, and he was the one that conquered the Babylonians and provided the opportunity for the Jews to return home to Jerusalem. And some of them did. I think 40-some-odd thousand did initially, but there was plenty more that was still around that hadn't returned yet when the story came to be. So the king at the time was a king named Ahasuerus. He's also called Xerxes. I'll call him Xerxes because it's easier to say. But that was the king of Persia at the time. And for some background on him, he was a grandson of Cyrus, if you remember from Wednesday night. That kind of gives you some reference to him of about 80 years later. And he had a queen named Vashti. And they had a feast there in Persia. I don't know if you kids remember the story when they had the feast in Persia. And the king decided, you know what, I want all my nobles to see my queen. I'm pretty proud of her. And so they called for the queen and Vashti, and she said no. And that didn't sit real well with them. Anyway, what happened was she was removed as queen. She was kicked out. And all the nobles said, well, you need to find another queen. So they looked all over the kingdom, and they had all these young women that came interviewed, for lack of a better word, for this position as queen of Persia. And Esther was a young Jewish woman, and she was selected to be queen of Persia. Esther she had been raised by her uncle named Mordecai. And Mordecai was a faithful Jew, followed the law, was by all accounts a very honorable man. And he had raised Esther as a niece and was still her counselor. And Mordecai is a character I want you to remember because he's going to come up later. Well, the king also had one of his nobles that was named Haman. And Haman was an evil man. And Haman gathered more power and grew in his strength and became very close to the king and had was promoted to great power so that everybody had to kind of almost treat Haman as the king. And one of the things was everybody had to bow down to Haman as well whenever, every time he was out riding around the city. And Mordecai was there in the gates, and Haman rode by on his chariot, and Mordecai wouldn't bow because he was a Jew. And it infuriated Haman. And so Haman made a scheme where he talked the king into saying, you know, there's this group of people that have their own laws and their own societies, are kind of separate from us. They need to be killed. And the king says, okay, says, go ahead and do whatever you need to do. And so he got all his goons together, and they picked out a day to kill all the Jews. And the reason it's called Purim is that's the way they figured out what day they're going to do it. They kind of, it was almost like rolling dice. They cast lots to say, okay, we're going to roll they were called Pur, and that decided, okay, this is the day we're going to kill all the Jews. And so that's why they call it Purim. Needless to say, that caused a great deal of stress to the Jews, because it was almost between this plan going in place. It took almost a year to get it implemented, and so the Jews knew it was coming, and so there was a lot of fear, a lot of concern, a lot of stress. You know, think about it. If all of a sudden they decided, okay, every member of the Church of Christ on whatever date of this year, we're going to kill them all. You know, it would sharpen our focus. And I think that's what it did with the Jews as well. And so this day has been set, and the plans are made. And Mordecai goes to Esther, and you know she is now the queen. And he goes, you know, you need to go talk to the king and get this fixed. And Esther goes, yeah, but if I go into the king without being invited, I can be killed. You know, it took a great deal of courage for this young woman to do this. To stand up and to do those things that were difficult and hard. I do want to read a little bit out of the fourth chapter of Esther, because you know Mordecai had to use messengers because he couldn't go in to see her. He had to use messengers, and he sent these messengers to her saying, "Hey, you got to go in there and get, you know, talk to the king." And Esther sent back to him and says, "You know, if I go in there unannounced, he can kill me." But in the 13th verse of the fourth chapter of Esther, he said, "Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, 'Think not that thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews.'" He says, don't think just because you're the queen that you're not going to be killed too. All the Jews were going to be killed. But the next verse is what I find is interesting. It says, "For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time," if you don't do this, if you're just going to remain silent, "then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place." That was Mordecai's faith. He knew God's commandments. He knew the prophecies. He knew that there was a future for the Jewish race. It says, it may not be, you know, even if you don't do what you're supposed to do, God is going to deliver us, the Jews. "Then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed." You know, if you don't do this, your family will die. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? You know, perhaps the Lord put Esther in that place at that time for that reason. And when we read the rest of the story, we know that he did. That was the purpose of it. That here was this time of great trial and stress that, you know, the Jews were there and, you know, were in danger of being destroyed completely. But God hadn't finished his work. You know, it was going to be thwarted. It was going, you know, God was going to be in control. But he chose to use this young woman to do it. And Mordecai was the one who gave that counsel. Mordecai was the one who made that effort to encourage her to do the right thing. And then she went in. She was, you know, the king wasn't upset. And after, you know, several events, he found out that, oh, Haman, who I trusted, is the one who's going to kill the queen I love and all of her family and all of her people. So he ended up, you know, the result was Haman died and all of the people that were involved in it. Like 75,000 people were killed. And what the king did was gave the Jewish the permission to defend themselves, that they could fight back. You know, in the world today, just and I was doing some research last night, just in the last 5 or 6 years, the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise of anti-Jewish thought is everywhere, especially surprisingly in Europe. Once again, I mean, we expect it from Islamic countries, but more and more in Europe and even in the United States, it's becoming more prevalent. And there was another event this week that I wanted to talk a little bit about. And that was the Prime Minister of Israel coming to America and giving a speech to Congress. And he made some comments that I feel like we should be aware of and to consider. Among all the things that he spoke, he began with some of his first comments was, "I come to you as Mordecai." He was using the same story in Esther that to refer. That was why he was coming. He was coming as Mordecai to warn, to encourage, just to try to strengthen. You know, think about Mordecai's story. He became aware of this plot to kill all the Jews. And so he went to Esther saying, "Esther, you're the one that has to do this. You got to stand up for what's right and do the right thing." He said, "Today the Jewish people face another attempt by yet another Persian potentate to destroy us." And then he went to describe the efforts by Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon. And, you know, what I want you to understand is modern Iran is ancient Persia. It's the same place. It's ruled now by an Islamic caliphate, and they have some, you know, different ideas. They are very militant. The thought of Iran with a nuclear weapon can cause some fear, should cause some fear, with what they have done in the last 30 or 40 years. One of their tenets of their religion is that they have to cause a great global unrest and catastrophe in order to bring in their Messiah. That's cause for concern. And so there are, and I don't want to get too political because that's not what I want, but, you know, there is currently talks about, you know, a treaty with Iran that would end up making it easier for Iran to have a nuclear weapon and threaten the region even more. And I, like I said, I don't want to say this to scare us, but I don't want us to walk through life with blinders on either and to think that, oh, everything's just fine. I think that we need to be aware of what's going on in the world because God is in control and He is the one who's doing things. He also, Prime Minister Netanyahu also mentioned that, you know, he was coming to America to ask America to stand with Israel. Which, if you think, since Israel's existence, America has always stood with Israel. And I think that there's that strong bond that's still there in the majority of people. I think that there are some that don't. But he was encouraging them to stand and be united in those efforts. But he also made the comment that even if Israel has to stand alone, Israel will stand. And I'm not going to stand up here and say that everything Israel does is perfect and right. But they are a chosen people still. So I want to give that background so that we can understand this is the world we live in. And we should be aware of what's going on. But I don't want to leave it there. I want to turn over to Isaiah. It was almost perfect that the chapters we studied Wednesday night were directly related to what was going on in the world even at that very time, the very moment. I want to read parts of the 40th chapter of Isaiah. A little background on this chapter is it's written to Israel that is in exile. It's already been taken away captive into Babylon. That's where their condition are. They're being, you know, they are slaves. But the first verse says, "Comfort ye." "Comfort ye my people, saith your God." When we start thinking about the world and all the things that are going on, we can get really worked up. We can get scared. We can get stressed. And God's saying, "Comfort ye." And He goes on to talk about why we're supposed to be comforted. "Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received the Lord's hand for all her double for all her sins." There is a time coming when the warfare is finished. There's a time when you know Christ is going to reign on this earth. We have to be reminded of that. That's what You know, Mordecai said, you know, when he was talking to her, he said, you know what? God's going to save his people. Okay? But we have a responsibility to be a part of that, an opportunity to be a part of that, to stand. It goes on to say, I'm going to hop down to the 8th verse. It says, the grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. It reminds us that the promises that God has given, we can read the end of the book and know how it ends. We can find comfort and strength in that. Because that word will not fail. It will stand forever. Continuing on, it says, O Zion, that bringest good tidings, get thee up into the high mountain. O Jerusalem, that bringest good tidings, lift up thy voice with strength. Lift it up. Be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the Lord God will come with strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm, carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. You know, that's the promise that we have. Even, you know, being aware of the events that are going on in the world, those are the promises that we get comfort from. He goes on to talk about, you know, God's majesty. And we talked a little bit about that Wednesday night, you know, how ridiculous it is for people to worship idols. And that, you know, he's above idols, he's above nations, he's above everything. He's above nature. Because he's God. He's the only thing that existed outside of creation. He created everything. But I want to hop down to the 28th verse. It says, hast thou not known, hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary, there is no searching of his understanding. You know, he is God. He is the one that's in control, and he has the power. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. If we go through our life on our own wisdom and our own strength, we fall. No matter how strong we think we are. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Those are the promises to hang on to strengthen us. I want to turn back a little bit to Psalms for another set of promises that I want to talk about as well. I'm going to turn to Psalms chapter 46. Verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. A refuge. A place that when we're scared, a place that when we're in danger, we run to. A place of safety. How do we run to God? We run to Him by obeying His commandments, to making whatever changes in our lives we need to make to draw us closer to Him. We run to Him by running away from the things of the world that would destroy us. Because God is our refuge. God is that place that we can be safe. So we got to run to Him for that protection. He is our strength. We don't need to rely upon our own strength, our own wisdom. We have to rely upon His strength. Our strength will not last. Our strength is insufficient, but God's is not. Continuing on, it says, Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried away into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. All these disasters, all these changes, all these this unrest, we're commanded that we will not fear. We don't have a reason to fear if we're doing what God tells us to do. Selah. There at the end of the third verse, that Selah, it's a musical interlude to time for contemplation, to consider those words that were part of this song. The second verse says, there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved, he uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. You know, most of the major cities of the world are on rivers. Babylon had a river going right through it. Egypt had the Nile going through it. Rome had the Tiber River going right through it. Jerusalem doesn't have a river that goes through it. It's on a hill. It's on a mountain. It has a stream that goes by it, but it's not it. But this says there's a river. That river is God's presence. There's not a river of water that goes through Jerusalem. It's the presence of God that gives nourishment or strength or refreshment. God's presence is depicted as that calm stream that provides refreshment. Despite the raging of the heathen, despite the kingdoms being moved, when He speaks, the earth melts. Because He is in control. We keep going. It says, the third verse, Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations He hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. God is in charge. He is in charge of all these events of the day that we live in, and we have to remember that. And He will be exalted. You know, be still. Find comfort in the knowledge that God's in control. Regardless of what happens in the coming years, God is in control. And we do not need to fear. I think, though, that it should give us an opportunity to pause and reflect. and we look at the world, and we see the day that we live in, and we see the prophecies that are written, and they should make us consider our lives and consider the things that are around us. It should make us do something. It should make us want to get right with God. Sometimes we get distracted by the school and by work and all the things that life throws at us. We've got to get reminded sometimes to get right with God. Nobody has a guarantee of tomorrow. You know, and whether not talking about whether Iran has nuclear weapons or not, it's just life. And we should be prepared. You know, if there's things in our lives, we've got to get rid of them. If there's things that we should be doing, we haven't done, we need to do them. We need to get ready for the return of Christ, because it will happen. And sooner than we think sometimes. I want to turn over to 1 John 2:28. Verse 28 says, "And now, little children, abide in him, that when he shall appear, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming." We know he's coming. We have the opportunity to be ready so that we don't get, you know, surprised by our spiritual life, and says, "Well, it's not what I wanted it to be. I didn't know you were going to come that soon." It's like our house. When we have company coming over to our house, what do? We clean it up. Because we don't want people to see how we really live, right? But what about our spiritual life and the return of Christ? We've got to make sure our spiritual lives are cleaned up and ready for any time he decides to visit. That we can stand, you know, be ready so that we can be there with confidence. I think that, you know, as a church, we should, you know, work at being more united. Deal with the sins that, you know, each of us have individual things in our lives, but we've got to deal with them. I want to turn over to Colossians chapter 3. I'm just going to start with the 12th verse. It says, "Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, and long-suffering, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness." Charity is that glue that holds us together. When we can have charity for each other, that's the thing that holds us together in these times. Because times will become difficult. It doesn't say we're going to, you know, the promise is that God's in control. And that in the end, God wins. That doesn't mean that every day is a walk in the park and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for everyone. It means that in the end, God will be victorious. That doesn't mean we won't have problems. It doesn't mean we won't have difficulties. But we have the promise that we are not alone in those. We have the promise that we will not be overwhelmed by them, that we will receive the strength from God to overcome them. Like I said, I bring those things up just so we're aware of the day that we live in. But at the same time, that we're not, we're surrounded by problems, but we're not overwhelmed. But we can still hold our head up and know that God's in control. I don't want to take away our joy because it's not the intention. Remember God's words to His people when they were captives, comfort ye. That's what I want to give you, is that comfort to know, okay, I see lots of things going on, but I know that God is in control. I know that God has a plan. I know how I'm supposed to live my life. And to have a chance to spend eternity with Him. I know the things I have to do. I know the promises I have to make. But we have to trust in God's protection and God's presence, His power. Those are the things that we trust in. You know, as the Church of Christ, we are linked to Israel. And like I said, Israel as a nation is not perfect. Don't agree with everything that's ever gone on. But they are His people. And it's not just them. I think about all the other 10 lost tribes that are out there that God is working with. The Church of Christ is linked with them. And, you know, Mordecai said that God would not allow anything to happen to the Jews. It was not part of His plan. They weren't going to be completely destroyed. It's the same with the Church of Christ. We have that same promise too. That we as a church will be cared for. But we as individuals have to make sure that we are doing the things that we need to do. That we can find that peace and find that comfort in that knowledge. So I thank you for your time.